my next guest, Fiona Rogers, all the way from Aranmore Island. Well, it's not that far, really. Hi, Fiona.
Hi, how are you?
How are you getting on?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Good stuff. Very, very good. You've had a really busy week, and I'm sure it's kind of an emotional roller coaster, is it? Because, you know...
Absolutely. It's been a really busy week. It's been a great week for, in terms of raising awareness for mitochondrial disease. But yeah, for myself and my husband, Sean, it's been quite emotional.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that first because we could go in and talk about this, that and the other fantastic Colin Farrell and all that. But yeah, the reason you're even in here discussing this is because you lost your lovely daughter.
We did.
And we shouldn't forget that.
No,
that.
Well, so, we will never forget that.
I mean, me. Not, of course.
No, I
you
know,
won't.
I know.
Tell us then... about the Katie Rose Foundation and why it was established.
Yeah, so myself and my husband established the Katie Rose Foundation in June. It's something we started to think of quite soon after Katie passed away. Mm. We felt like Katie was actually initially diagnosed in Vancouver, Canada, and we noticed quite a difference in terms of lengths of time for diagnosis between Canada and Ireland. So we felt that it was important to have supports in place in Ireland. There weren't too many in place when we came home. There's a foundation in the UK that we would contact and get great advice from. And we just felt when she passed away that maybe it was the time that something similar was set up in Ireland. Mm.
So. Tell us about the disease.
The disease, mitochondrial disease, essentially the mitochondria are present in almost every single cell in our bodies, and they are responsible for the energy production within our bodies. And so these cells make up all of our organs, and so the mitochondria begin to fail, which is what mitochondrial disease is. It's essentially a problem with the energy production. And once the mitochondria begin to fail, the body just does not have enough energy to support these systems. And essentially, there's, I suppose, like a blackout within the body.
Right.
Organs start to fail. Simple viruses like a bug or a common cold can be fatal, really, for a child or an adult with mito.
And how long after, how long did it take before you started realizing that there was...
a problem.
Yeah.
With Katie developed absolutely normally until she was about 15 months of age. Mm. She reached all of her milestones. We were just waiting for those first steps, you know, that every parent waits for. She was cruising around the furniture and we were just waiting for her to let go. And Katie was our first, so we didn't really have anything to compare it to. So 15 months came, I became concerned. I was seeing other people's children on Facebook and they were taking their first steps and took her to a pediatrician. We were told not to worry. Then around 18, 19 months, she got a viral eye infection.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, there was just like a light gone out in her eyes. Mm. She stopped smiling. She stopped crying. She jammed her fingers in a drawer and she didn't cry one day. And that was a real telltale sign for me. I was waiting for the scream.
How ironic that it would be something like that.
Yeah, totally.
But you just didn't get the reaction you were expecting.
Just didn't get the reaction. You know, she just was very tired. So we took her straight down to the Children's Hospital in Vancouver and we were kept in that day. And 5 days later, we were out with a diagnosis of Lee's disease, which is the specific form of mitochondrial disease that Katie had.
Absolutely devastating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Words can't describe it, I'm sure. In terms of what can be done in raise awareness, is this support for it? Is it to try and maybe get more research in it? Is there any treatment? Or?
There's no treatment. There's no cure. It is a fatal disease. It's a progressive disease. Mm. And so the Katie Rose Foundation, I suppose first and foremost, awareness is key in my opinion. It's very hard for a GP to make a diagnosis when the word mitochondrial disease isn't even in their minds.
It's not in the vocabulary.
It's not.
Yep.
I think that's where we need to start. Even if that's a parent who hears somebody speak about it and says, yeah, that sounds like my child. Mm. Even if the parent brings the term to the GP, okay, it's not necessarily the right way that
it's
it should
ideal,
be.
It's not ideal, but it's doable.
Yeah. But it's doable. So awareness is key. And then, yes, research. We are funding a research project in the UK, the Lilly Foundation in the UK, which are the big foundation over there. We're going to work in partnership with them. They have some great research projects going on over there. So we're going to help with those.
And if a breakthrough is made in England or wherever it is, Vancouver, wherever, everyone benefits from it. So people shouldn't be thinking,
it's not there. All.
Exactly.
We wanted to find the one that we thought would be most beneficial. There wasn't anything going on in Ireland. It doesn't matter where this happens, because once it happens, it's going to go worldwide, you know.
Precisely. Now, It's escalated really quickly for you, hasn't it?
It has, quicker than we even imagined, But you know what? There's that's Katie working from wherever she is in my mind. It's taken on a world of its own, a life of its own. And we're just super proud of her.
Can I see Katie, do you mind?
Yes, you can indeed. Thanks. I have two photos here. One is taken last Halloween, which is just the particular time of year we're at, I thought. And the other one was taken just about 10 days before she passed away.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
And in that second picture, the one just before she passed, she looks perfect.
Perfect. She does. And we had an awareness photo shoot here in last December 1st with Danny O'Carroll from Mrs. Brown's Boys. And Katie was, you know, quotation marks, so well. I mean, she had mitochondrial disease, but she was so happy and so well. And 12 days later, we were taking her home.
So bloody brave children, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, it that's the key with mitochondrial disease. Things can change in an instant. Mm-hmm. And so people will say, oh, she looks so well, or they look so well. Tomorrow could be a different day. You just don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. There's no fairy tale ending for this, unfortunately. And
you're in a position like, you know now. And people are saying things like you says, God, Katie looks really well. Yeah. And you, what do you say? Do you go, oh, thanks?
You know,
or do you go, you don't understand because tomorrow it could be so much? You know what I mean?
And I understand that people don't understand.
People know what to say.
They don't know what to say. And to be fair, you know, I wouldn't have known what to say.
Yeah.
And they don't mean anything but goodness from it.
Of course.
You know, so
but
you have
you're
to,
still,
you know,
when they
you know
leave the room, you're still there.
Of course.
And you have to deal with all of that. Now, during the week, a few people went from Donegal down to Dublin. Tell us how that unfolded and what was that all about?
So Donegal and also someone from Cork and Arklow, these were families with children with mitochondrial disease. And one of these mums, Grania, who's become a great friend, had a friend who was a friend of Colin Farrell's. So
there you go.
Asked for favours and he very kindly and very willingly came to meet with us all and to, well, we thought just take a few photos and get, you know, the profile raised and raise some awareness. But my God, he was an absolute gent.
Yeah.
He gave so much time to everyone there. He was really taken with Katie's story, visibly emotional. You know, he broke down in tears. Yeah. He has a little boy too who is a special need. Yeah. So I suppose it was just, it struck a chord with him. He was very taken with all of the children and really gave a lot of his time to them. One little boy, Oren, beautiful little boy, Oren Nibbs, Aisling, his mum, was saying how, you know, he would drool with the condition. And Colin, just like instinct, with his bare hand, just on three separate occasions, just wiped away his drool like it was nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very telling of the type of person that he is.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Absolutely.
You can put on a show, but
there was no show. He didn't walk
reality.
Into that room as a superstar.
Yeah.
It was very apparent as soon as he entered. He was coming in there. As a father, as a person, a very
and
compassionate
and someone who understands.
Person. Absolutely. That,
that
was
understands.
Very, totally.
Exactly. And it's great for, because what happens is it gets the pictures in the paper. You know what I mean? He might do something down the line or whatever. Yeah. So it's a really big leg up for you guys, isn't
absolutely.
It? And lovely for the families and children to get
it
a wee
is.
Bit of a...
Oh, totally. And they deserve it. They deserve it. And listen, it's not an easy...
Plus, he's pretty handsome.
Ah, he's all right. He's all right.
Is your husband listening by any chance here?
He is indeed. No, he's very
handsome.
No, I'm
only joking. He is,
but you know what? I think beauty definitely comes from within. And
yeah,
he is.
Precisely.
Absolutely.
You were talking about, were you living in Canada then?
We were.
And then you've moved home now, have you?
We moved home because of Katie's diagnosis, actually. We were told on that day how things were going to go. And it became apparent straight away that this was really, really bad. And so, I had just had newborn twins at the time too, and we packed up our lives. And like I said, your life can change in an instant. You know, we had a whole life planned over there and we were settled and we saw our three children at the time going on to school and everything over there. And just like that, within 10 days, we were back here with a terminally ill child and then this prospect that the twins, 25% chance that they would have it. So your life is just
so bittersweet because you want to concentrate on Katie.
Totally.
But then you're thinking about the twins and your emotions are pulled left,
they
right
are, and you know what? I don't even know if you know what your emotions are in something like that. You're just so shattered. You just... Yeah, everything that you've seen.
Have
your
you had an opportunity yet? You've been so busy. Have you had an opportunity yet to deal with everything as best you can?
As best you can. I don't think you ever quite deal with
but
something
But you know
like
what I'm
this.
On about, actually?
It's been a whirlwind.
Yeah.
It's... You do... I feel like sometimes you feel like, is the fog just lifting now, kind of from the last 9 months, 10 months, you know? And you do sometimes, like this week has been so emotional, and we were in this hotel meeting Colin Farrell, and it was so emotional.
But Katie's not there.
No, that's it, yeah, you see. Katie's, and you're not looking there. Around, and you're, yeah, envious of all the other, yeah, mummies who have
exactly
their little babies there, and they know that too. And they're...
And that's a credit to you to put,
thank you,
that to one side.
Yeah, well, it's very, you know, important to me as, mm, well, because, you know, like I said, I did notice a big difference between Canada, mm, and here. And I really do feel like sometimes mitochondrial disease, so many people, what's that?
Mm.
And it's just sort of like they're kind of pushed aside. I don't know. I just think awareness could really change a lot.
100%. Yeah. I agree with you. And, how can people get more information about the Katie Rose Foundation, yes, or support it? Because research, you know, yeah, there are things that people are living from now. Mm-hmm. And it's because of people like you, mm-hmm, who raised awareness that, yeah, that got money together for research that, yeah, people don't die from them anymore.
Absolutely. And that's the goal really here, mm, I suppose. So, yeah, the Katie Rose Foundation, we have a website, thekatierosefoundation.com, and Facebook page, the Katie Rose Foundation. On the website, there is a link to donate online. And listen, if you can't donate, because I know everyone can't donate, and listen, things are tough for people, but, yeah, awareness is key. So read it, get the information. Contact me, Fiona at thekatierosefoundation.com, for information. If you're worried, or if you have a diagnosis, just become aware. That's, mm-hmm, that's the message here.
And the twins you talked about?
The twins, yeah, they've had their initial testing. They've had their initial MRIs and blood work, and so far, so good.
Well, fingers so crossed. Katie's looking down on them
I
too.
I think so. I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fiona, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been
me.
Really nice to speak to you.
Thank you.
I wish it was in completely different circumstances.
As do I.
But be that as it may, and for, yes, Katie, we have to talk about these things.
We do, and she would want us to. And
exactly.
Yes.
And, yeah, get that info out.
Yeah.
The Katie Rose Foundation, the website is there. If you can do any, even just to raise awareness.
That's
because if you would have had someone to call, or if you'd have got, yeah, an early diagnosis from the,
yeah,
GP, you wouldn't have got,
oh,
maybe
absolutely,
false hope, or,
totally,
you know,
yeah,
things may, you could have, it wouldn't have changed the outcome.
No, it wouldn't have changed
it could
the
have
outcome.
Changed the process
it
of how
have,
you and,
yeah,
your husband and the whole family and friends had to deal,
yeah,
with it.
Yeah, and there's been people that I've talked to over here who've waited 3 years for diagnosis. I mean, that's on another level. So that's a really tough path to go down when you know there's something wrong, badly,
yeah,
wrong,
yeah,
but nobody's giving you a word for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That has to change. Those 5 days in Vancouver for me were like the longest 5 days of my life. 3 years doesn't bear thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just think that's wrong on every level.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to change.
Yep, definitely. Fiona, thanks so much.
Thank you
for coming
me.
In.
Thank you
and
so
for everything that you're doing, putting what you're going through to one side to some extent publicly, yeah, to help other people. It's brilliant what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, that is Katie, I beg your pardon, that's Fiona Rogers. We're talking about her lovely daughter Katie, who sadly passed, but in her memory and in her name, the Katie Rose Foundation is trying to raise awareness. You can get details on the Katie Rose Foundation, search it, and I'm sure you'll get all the details that you need, and you can also get a contact for Fiona there. And we have a real treat, musical treat coming up for you before the end of the programme, and it is a Velvet Alibi. Anna Nolan, I beg your pardon, is the lead vocalist with this group. Thank you so much for filling a bus.
Hey.
It seems like that's what would be required.
Yeah.
Tell us about Velvet Alibi.
Well, we are a 11-piece band. We've 11. Got 9 members here today,
wow,
for you. But 11-piece band based in Derry. Everybody's from this sort of region, Northwest, Donegal and Derry. We've got players from many different outfits in the region. We've got Neil Burns, who's from Comrade Hat. We've got Rowan Armstrong and myself, a Velvet Alibi. Joseph Layton in there. Orla, who's Calamity Gin. She's local to this region. And yeah, we're just a big sort of ensemble.
Sounds fantastic. But so many different styles and to all blend together.
Yeah, so we've got in there at the moment, we've got keyboard, bass, trumpet, saxophone, 3 vocals and guitar.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're playing the first full set, I'm told, in Derry next Saturday. Is that correct?
It's our first full set in Derry.
Yeah.
We've been playing around Donegal quite, mm-hmm, a bit. We've played McGrory's and we've played the Revelry twice here in Letterkenny, and Dunfanaghy Jazz and Blues Festival. So this will be our first full set in Derry.
And we're blessed with a great listenership in Derry. So loads of people listening and they can get along to it. It is in Bennigan's
Bar. Yeah, it's a great spot if anybody knows Bennigan's. John Layton there's trying to put on music every night of the week. So Friday, Saturday, right through to Monday.
That's something needs to be supported. Because if someone's running a business and they take, it's sort of like if you build it, they'll come sort of a situation. Uh-huh. So it's great that that they're going with that, and it needs supporting. And you're in there on Saturday. So what is the format of your gig? How long does it last?
On Saturday, we'll be playing, I'd say, about an hour and a half, and we'll have a warm-up act before us. Our very own Neil Burns, Comrade Hat, will be doing his own set beforehand. Mm. And then ourselves. So I think we'll start about... the music starts about 10:30, and we'll be going on until...
I can't see you stopping at an hour and a half. I have a feeling you'll run for 2 hours, no bother to you. It's fantastic. I can't wait to hear you.
Uh-huh.
Again, you know, there's a lot of obvious, and we've a limited mic set up just at the moment, but I'm sure it's going to sound absolutely fabulous. Where can people catch you? Any other gigs coming up?
Yeah, we are playing at the end of Echo Echo's International Festival of Dance and Movement, which is in Derry, and we'll be playing on the 15th, which is a Sunday, in their great theatre space there on Magazine Street. Mm-hmm. And it's a great festival. It runs from the 5th to the 15th of November, and we've got lots of international artists coming over. I work for Echo Echo as well.
I never figured that. Well, give it a good plug if you want.
So
that's in Derry.
That's in Derry.
And is it in one venue or spread over a number of
venues? It's in our own venue. We have a theatre there on
Brilliant.
Magazine Street.
Excellent.
And we're bringing over artists from Finland, Norway, Croatia.
Good time of the year to hold it to November, because you kind of have
not
all
so
the
much
eyes on you, don't you?
Going on as
and
well.
And do you do the festival circuit this year?
Next year we're planning. We're in the recording studios this month, and we're getting ourselves a few tracks together, and then we hope to be on the festival circuit next year. And we're a great band for festivals, because people have danced to every single gig so far.
Well, I can imagine, because it's kind of a music that if you like music at all, with the instruments that's involved at the very least, you know what I mean, it has a broad appeal. What are you going to perform for us today? Are you going to do two songs for us?
We're going to do two songs.
Fantastic.
The first song is called Sweet,
mm-hmm.
and
named after me, of course,
yeah. And then the second one is called Waiting for Something to Happen,
named after you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm only messing. So you can run from one into the other if you so wish.
Great.
That'd be fantastic. Well, do you want to go around and join the rest of the guys?
Yeah.
Do you want to name check them, or are they all too shy, or what way do you want to do it?
So we have Erin Quinn on backing vocals.
I know Erin. Erin, you've been in here before, haven't you?
Yay.
Yes, I recognise you.
Teresa Gallagher on backing vocals. The very talented Joseph Layton on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Bradley on trumpet.
Uh-huh.
Orla Calamity Gin on saxophone.
Gin and Calamity, they go together anyway, don't they?
Dr. Neil Burns on keyboards.
Right.
We've got Rowan Armstrong on bass, and the ever so talented finger drums of Paul Fox. That's electronic drumming.
I can't wait for this. Go on.
Okay. Great.
And Anna Nolan, of course, the lead vocalist, who'll be going around and joining them. So just a reminder for you, we're going to be listening to Velvet Alibi. They're kind enough to mention, or they're kind enough to sing two songs for us. And they are performing their first full set in Derry, in Bennigan's Bar, next Saturday, the 17th of October, and support acts and all that showbiz. So if you could get along to that, I think after you've heard this, you'll very much want to. Okay, it's Velvet Alibi.
Way color fills the sky.
absolutely fantastic. Oh, we're going to get another song now, straight off.
I had a weight in my pocket, but it's almost gone. And my feet are too tired for walking. I've been heading this direction for goodness knows how long. With just my mind doing the talking, I've been asking some questions about all the things I've done. Some changes upon the horizon. 'Cause life is too short to get stuck where you went wrong. I know that something's gonna happen. Thank you.
that was Velvet Alibi, who are playing in Derry. Their first full set in Derry. It's in Bennigan's Bar. It's on Saturday the 17th of October. And if that hasn't convinced you to go along, I don't know what will. Moving on the programme now, and there's a new documentary that has been released, not widely, but certainly overseas. It focuses on Donegal Islander John O'Brien, and the film's called A Turning Tide in the Life of a Man. It's directed and made by Loic Georgian, who joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Loic.
Good morning.
So tell us then about John O'Brien and why you thought this Donegal man was so interesting that you decided to make a film about him.
Well, it happened in 2006. I was myself, I used to live on Tory Island, and I met John on the pier. He was going fishing at the time from Inishbofin, and I met him, and he was starting to campaign against the salmon ban at the time, and I met him, and I proposed him to make a film about him, about his campaign, and which we did for TGCAR at the time. We made a short film, and then slowly I gradually saw that the film was going to be bigger than just the English Boffin story.
And just to put this into context at the time, I mean, you had fishermen who were told effectively they had to down tools. There was a compensation scheme which was only worth in and around €20,000. And yeah, people were being asked not only to stop their work, but effectively stop their way of life. And John was not going to accept that, was he?
No, he was not going to accept that at all. And he refused the money. And 30 of Islanders fishermen refused the compensation at the time, and they were the only one in the country. So I kind of I followed the group of men. You know, it started with John, but then after that it was the Arranmore fishermen as well, because there were a big group of them following John, and there were 30 of them. So I just managed to follow the group, you know, in that campaign all for 8 years all around Europe.
So over the course of that time then, I presume then you chronicled or had to chronicle how they diversified in the industry or how they went on to earn a living. Is that really the thrust of what we're going to be enjoying when we watch this documentary?
Well, what you see in the documentary is that most of them had to go into an intense fishing of crab and lobster, which was really a disaster for them, because usually they used to fish, you know, certain amount of fish in different season, in different time, but because they were not allowed to fish salmon and they were not allowed to fish white fish at all after as well, because of the Area 6A in Donegal, they were not allowed to fish any fish at all. They had to go into the crab and lobster, all of them. So it was really, for them, it was really sad to do that, because they were not brought up to do that. You know, all the knowledge from their parents, grandparents, you know, was, okay, you diversify what you're catching following the season. You know, so that was really that's the point of the film, one of the big points.
Of course, and that's what it's turned out to be. But at the start, you mustn't have fully realised the scale of the project, though, because it really it started off small, but then took on a real sort of European-wide feel to it.
Yeah, no, I didn't really. I was like them, you know, I was following what was happening. And, you know, John and the guys, the lads from Arranmore, you know, they were, you know, 1 week in Dublin and 1 week in Brussels and 1 week all around Europe. And, you know, we were following what was happening and, you know, discovering, you know, more, getting more information, more data, and more to understand more the process, who decide what the government decide, how Europe manage and how Europe influence the government, and how the government use Europe as an excuse to implement really bad, you know, really bad decisions. So that's the film showed the whole process, like all citizens, how a European citizen is catched into the political process of his own country and Europe. That's what the film showed. But I didn't know that, you know, at the beginning. Yeah. Really, it just came up.
Well, sometimes
the story, you know, was going on.
I'm sure sometimes as a filmmaker, some of the best stories are the stories that you didn't fully envisage to begin with, that grow organically themselves.
Sorry, what do you mean by that?
That's, you know, you can't necessarily plan how something's going to be, and some of the best projects are the ones that develop naturally.
Absolutely, yeah. But after that, you know, the problem we have as a filmmaker is that to have the funders behind and the broadcasters who want to know how it's going to finish and how what's going to happen next and all that. So we have to be in between what's happening and all the funders who want to know, you know, when is this going to end, you know, and how it's going to, you know, how you're going to tell a story. But in that very particular kind of story, a political story, you have to follow what's happening. So everybody had to wait, you know, and see, you know, what's the next step and what's the next step and so on, you know. It's very unique.
Yeah. Was it interesting to observe and document John O'Brien, an accomplished fisherman, but not a politician, walking the corridors of power in Brussels, as someone mentioned, and perhaps pun intended, like a fish out of water?
Yeah, well, actually, that's why they love John in Europe, because John had no agenda. He was there just to understand and to bring the message there that they had to look after the small coastal communities and the small fishermen. And he was just there for that. And he was actually all the politicians there really, they were following John and they were listening to John. Even the highest top one, like Maya de Menaki, was in charge of the new reform of the fishing the fishing policy. And really, they were all really, really close to John, because John had no agenda. He was not there to do some politics, you know. He was just there to represent small people who are not represented in Europe. And if you're not there, they forget about you. And they just ignore you because they don't have time. And it's just about lobbying. It's just about being there. You just, if you're there, they, okay, after a while, they listen to you.
So, Loic, this was an ongoing project. How easy or difficult was it to come to a decision to say, okay, we're going to have to go into post-production and get this documentary aired?
Well, a few things happened in 6-8 months' time. We got Yanagers got a paragraph in the new reform of the common fishery policy in Europe voted, and it was a small paragraph which said that the states should look after the small islands community. That went through, so that was kind of a good end for sure. But in the same time, the Irish government kind of asked Europe as well to lift the ban on the Area 6 space. So a few things happened in the same time. So we could, you know, at the time we decided, well, we could use this to kind of end a first film, because it's going to be probably a second film.
Now, how has the documentary been received so far for those that have seen it?
So far, it's going very well. We've done festivals already. We've done festivals in Ireland, festivals in France, festivals in Serbia, in Belgium, different countries. And it's just the beginning, really. We are screening in Paris next week for the first time. So we got yesterday, the support of distributing the film in France. So the film's going to be seen all around the country in France. Anyway, hopefully it'll be the same in Ireland.
I was going to say I'm delighted for your compatriots, but when are we here in Ireland going to be able to enjoy it? Are there any screenings at festivals, or are you hoping for a broader release, or what are the plans there at this stage?
Well, there are different people and contacts we are talking with, but funny enough, for the moment, the Irish don't want to see or can't see the potential of the Irish market of this film. So it looks like the other countries in Europe are more, they are more open to that kind of documentary, and they support it more. So for the moment, the Irish reaction is a bit slow, but with what's happening with the media at the moment, with the newspaper and a few festivals in the country, things might change. So we will see, wait and see, and in the next few months we know, you know, what really is going to happen for the film in Ireland. But definitely we're going to tour with the film, whatever happens. Yesterday I was screening the film in Galway again. That's the second time in Galway, and we have all the small islands around the country who wants to screen the film. So we're going to tour with the film, whatever happens, because people are asking to see the film, so we will organize things, you know. And
well, you'd imagine
the website, there's a Facebook, and people can, you know.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Distributors aren't biting your hand off to show this film in the country for which it's the main focus is. But as you say, hopefully that will change. Loic, the phone line is fading on us a little bit. We really do appreciate you coming on and discussing your work, and we really do hope to see it very, very soon.
You're very welcome. No problem. Anytime.
Okay. Thank you so much. That is Loic there, Georgiana, filmmaker. Who made a documentary about a Donegal fisherman. A Turning Tide in the Life of a Man is actually what it's called, and it's the story of Donegal Islander John O'Brien. And interesting that markets such as France, very keen to see it, and it's been distributed there. And then in the country for which for which most of it is focused on, and the person, the main focus, where he came from, and it's not being distributed here, just as of yet, anyway.
In front of me is Alan Wiley and also Noel Sweeney. Gentlemen, you're very welcome onto the show.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you.
Very good. Now, Alan, we had you in previously. We were talking about the tractor run.
That's right.
How did it go?
It couldn't have went better. I couldn't believe it. To date now, to this morning, there's 21,340 euros lifted.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. Like, you know, it's so good this year. Like,
what was the turnout like?
159 tractors left.
Wow. That's more than last year.
It was. Oh, it was up.
Because I was thinking that, because when I was coming into work, they were all over the place.
That's right.
Coming down the bridge, there's about seven of them.
Actually raining tractors.
It was raining tractors. Indeed.
I couldn't believe it myself. Like,
And the money's still coming in?
Yes. Well, I have a dance now on Saturday. This day week.
Okay.
At the Station House. Maybe you'd mention, like, as a presentation dance.
And so all the fifth vintage tractor run in aid of the good and new Cancer Drop-In Centre and Lodge Galway. You talked about that eloquently a couple of years ago. Presentation dance Saturday the 17th of October at 9 p.m. It's in the Station House Hotel. Lovely spot as well. And the spot prizes on the night and supper and music by Black Magic.
That's right.
There will be tractor driving music played that night too.
What,
as well.
Noel, yes. What is tractor driving music?
Tractor driving music. You can't really say it in radio. It's chip kicking music, you know. Yeah.
Oh, you just said it now. Jesus. Beep. That'll be fine in post edit.
Oh, he's doing a wonderful job here. He's doing a wonderful job. Yeah. You know, for a man to lift that kind of money for those charities, both of them are, as is then, both myself and Alan availed of these services on a few occasions before we even discovered that we had to. We were lifting money for these before we decided. We didn't realise
that was the really interesting aspect of this, that you ended up on the bus yourself.
Ended up on the bus. Yeah. And an awful lot of people are like that. I mean, there's a bus load going out of Donegal every Friday, or coming back every Friday and going away every Monday, you know. So it is.
And the Friends of Letterkenny General Hospital also do some great fundraising for the bus to Dublin as well.
Very good.
So, you know, it's a two-pronged approach, but we're still having to do it. And why are we still having to do
it? Well, it's difficult, you know. The public transport, when you come out after. Yeah. As Alan knows himself, both of us there, before you get the treatment, you drink 3 litres of water.
Yes.
And you hurry out the door to catch a bus, and you can imagine drinking 3 litres of water and heading down the road. You know, there's an odd stop here and there along the way, you know.
Watch your mouth, Noel. I'm afraid what you're going to come out with.
We're not going to detail about it.
Listen, guys, thanks so much for coming. Anyone you want to thank before we.
Yes, I want to thank the Garda and. Yvonne, their staff at the Die Arch.
Yes.
And all them people left money, like.
Everyone got a breakfast as well.
Everybody got a breakfast and they get a supper. And listen, anybody hasn't got a ticket now for that dance.
Where are they available?
Come along. The no call for ticket. Tractor man's all free.
No call for
tractor
a ticket.
Tractor man's all free. No.
I love it. Okay. Right. Listen, 21 grand. That's going to be a big push in the night. You can push that up past last year's total.
Last year was 17.3.
You've already done it.
Last year.
Fantastic. Listen, it's fantastic work you're doing, Alan. I know people love hearing you on because you do fantastic work and you're so modest, but thanks so much.
Well,
and Noel, thank you as well.
Okay, Greg.
It's nice to see you in.
Anybody that ever used that bus knows the part that has.
Exactly.
That's all I can say.
Alan, you're a superstar.
No.
Alan Wiley, give me that ticket one more time. Plug this for you before you take the head off me. Presentation dance, it's at the lovely Station House Hotel next Saturday. Starts at 9 p.m. Supper and music by Black Magic. Great tractor driving music, as we're told. And you don't need a ticket. You can turn up on the day and support that.